Welcome back to ForgeCast. My name is Nils Ögren.
I'm Sam Towns.
I'm Alex Norton.
And I'm Roy Adams.
Yes, we have a very special guest on this particular episode, Mr. Roy Adams from Christ-Centered Ironworks.
Somebody that everybody, I think, is familiar with, very familiar with.
Yes.
Oh, and if they're not, they should go look him up, like, right now.
Yes, absolute joy to have you on the show, Roy.
Yes.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for taking your time out. We're glad you could come and join us on this frosty morning, I'm sure, for you.
Not quite a frosty morning, but it's definitely a wet one this morning. Got a nice storm rolling through Ohio. You never know what the weather will be.
Yeah, speaking as a fellow solid fuel forge blacksmith, I would love to trade weather with you. East coast of Australia is brutal at the moment.
Wow. How hot is it over there?
I think in Fahrenheit it'd be a bit close to 120.
Woo! Yeah, that's brutal.
We had 89% humidity on top of that as well the other day, and that was at 10 p.m. in the evening.
Holy cow. Well, I know it gets quite hot here in Ohio during midsummer. The hottest temp in the shop was 145 degrees last year during summer, so... So I'm no stranger to hot temperatures, but not that hot all the time.
Sweden, we're pretty cold, actually.
Yeah, well, the land of ice and snow.
Yeah, but we have great summers as well for 2 months.
Well, it's probably speaking of what we've been doing, it's probably a good idea to get into the what have we been up to segment, and we can actually have Roy join in because I'm sure he's been up to some pretty interesting stuff.
You want to start us off, Nils? What have you been up to this week?
Yeah, sure. Let me see. What have I been doing? Yes, I have finally got the thumb out of my back and started working on my leg vise. I have a really big one. It's like 20 centimeters at the, what do you say?
The jaws?
The jaws, yeah. Okay. So it's very big and it weighs like, I don't know, maybe 50 kilos or something, 60. It's very big. So I've been working on that, forging a spring for it, and also trying to make a table, welding a table to for it. But it's been harder than I imagined. And
You got to make those things very heavy.
Yeah, and I also finished my dog's head hammer, and it's been working very good. And I'm working currently on the axe for a customer, and it's also going to be my new line of axes, as I told you in earlier episodes.
I saw that on Instagram. It looks great.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty pretty satisfied. But it's not exactly how I wanted it to turn out. I wanted the cheeks to be a little bit... not wider, but taller. But I'll fix that for next time. A power hammer would definitely be sweet in this case because forging it by hand has been quite the challenge.
Damn good.
Yeah, so that's basically. And my hand is not healed yet, so it's been pretty rough, to be honest.
Right.
How about you, Sam? What have you been up to?
Me? Well. I've been kind of working on all of my intro to blacksmithing stuff, my beginner blacksmith series on YouTube. On Wednesday, I uploaded my last in the 5 tips for beginner blacksmiths, basically just using a very basic setup to show that what you're capable of with very basic materials. And I'm kind of videoing some more stuff using that kit to try and, kind of explore what you can do with a very minimal kit. On top of that,
a good video worth checking out.
I
had a friend of mine out today. We were working on a draw knife that he's making for a friend of his. Basically I've just been plotting out what I'm going to be doing for the next couple of months with the YouTube channel and all of my custom orders and stuff like that. I've got so much on my plate, it's not funny. And unfortunately today I came down with the dreaded lurgy, the man flu. Feeling like I got run over by a truck, but I'll get there.
Hold your head over the coal forge, that'll sort you out.
That's the one, man.
Actually, and don't forget the terry cloth towel.
Yeah.
Yeah, the blue ninja.
I have to admit, I hadn't forgotten how much I like the smell of burning charcoal.
Yeah.
You know, because I have to like quit charcoal forging for, you know, 6 or 7 months at a time during fire ban season. I kind of lose, you know, I kind of forget how much I enjoy using solid fuel forges. Mm. But yeah, good to get back to it. But yeah, how about yourself, Alex? What have you been up to?
Well, as some of you might know, I've been preparing and I'm very near to making the move to the country to be moving to blacksmith full time. So a lot of my work has been preparing all of the tooling and that I need. I'm working with Sam at the moment designing a new fire pot, which is he's got a friend that's got a laser cutter. Normally I was going to fabricate it myself and I was all prepared to do it, but having access to a laser cutter makes that job a lot easier. But you would have seen on my Instagram, I'm actually building a new hand crank blower, because trying to actually find a decent, something like a buffalo blower in the middle of suburban Brisbane is a nightmare. and when you do find one, somebody wants to charge extortionate rates for it. So being an engineering background person, I'm just fabricating one myself, and I've got all the good bearings and all the materials ready to go. I'm just waiting for the weather to cool a little bit. I also got that half of the order from Sam of some great tooling, because I haven't been able to forge lately over here, and he's made me some gravers and a new dog's head hammer, a monkey tool, some riveting sets. It's all great. A little bit sad to have somebody else do them, because I would rather do them myself. I just cannot do it at the moment because of all of the packing and moving and sorting and things, but it's always a joy to have the work of another artisan that I respect greatly in my shop. So it's been a huge help, and it's been basically a giant rush to build tooling.
Awesome.
So but it probably pales in comparison to the sort of work that Roy's been doing. So tell us about what you've been up to, Roy.
Well, first of all, I like to say you guys lead very interesting lives. It's great to take and hear about things going on over in Australia. So what I have been up to here recently is I've been finishing up a 150mm challenge. It was something that was going around on Instagram. And of course, I'm late to the gate, like as always. So I've got that all finished up. It was a Gothic style door knocker that I had made. And I just put the final touches on the last video yesterday for that. And then just trying to keep orders out the door. I've got a couple tools that I'll be putting into manufacture here before long, hopefully to help out some beginner smiths. So I'm not going to say a whole bunch about that just yet, but that's in the works. Also filming for a DVD right now, a DVD course. And I guess the main thing that I've been up to is creating tooling in my shop to go more into the type of ironwork that I'm going to be doing for the next decade or so, which is French Baroque style ironwork. So that's what that's what I've been up to lately. That and life and tooth pain and all those good things. So I was telling Sam before this interview here that I actually yesterday I had to go to the dentist because my face, right side of my face, was all swollen up. Ended up having a tooth infection of some kind. So they got me on some heavy narcotics right now and antibiotics.
So if he starts laughing a lot, you know what's going on.
Yeah, so if I get goofy, don't hold it against me.
anything he says that is contentious on this show, you can just blame it on the painkillers.
Yeah, and you're still keeping that amazing video schedule. It's quite inspirational.
Yeah. No, the secret behind that is I batch film, so I might film 4 or 5 videos in a day, and then I try to keep that consistent for about a week. And then I try to film at least 2 videos a day, whether they be tutorials or instructionals. And that way I've always got one in the lead or one ahead of what I need. So if I need to take some time off, Like I haven't been doing a lot of filming here lately, except for yesterday was the exception of that. Then I can take the time off that I need, and there's not a break in the video posting schedule.
That's a great idea. I'm really looking forward to being able to regularly do the videos. It's going to be a bit of a game changer for me. I'll have to try and take a leaf out of that book, I think.
Yeah. It would definitely help you out.
I've had so much time off recently that I haven't had time to film in advance. So that'll be something I'll get back to working on in the near future. is trying to get a at least a one video lead on my video schedule.
Yeah.
But, and that actually does lead into our topic of the week, really, which comes down to marketing yourself in the effort to actually turn your craft into a business. And having Roy on the podcast, I'm sure any amateur smith right up to people who do it professionally have been following Roy for many years, I'm sure. I know I have. I know Sam has. I know Nils has. So much so that when you become a YouTuber and you're thinking of what to say when you start a video feed, the first thing that pops into most people's mind is, "Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the workshop."
That is synonymous with my videos.
Yeah, and that in itself, though, is creating a brand which makes you instantly recognizable and your videos instantly recognizable. And that is one of the core components of marketing yourself, is being consistent in your image.
Yeah. Kind of to talk on that just a bit. So that's something that I kind of naturally fell into, but it was intentional. So I was kind of looking for how to address people in my videos, where I didn't sound like a complete, goob on my videos when I first started my intro. It sounded like I actually knew what I was talking about, because although I may have a bit of a stage presence now or look fairly comfortable on camera, that's after we're coming up on 1,500 videos on YouTube. So we're only about 310 away right now. So about 310. So we're I don't know what that is. 1,100 and yada, yada. Don't do math on camera. There's a big advice for you, fellas. Don't do math. But that's one of those things that you kind of have to be intentional about, because it's something that people get used to every day, kind of like a daily sitcom or something like that. It's what they kind of know you for. So, if you sign out a certain way, people get used to it's natural for a human being to take and think along those lines, like, okay, he's getting ready to say it, so I can go get a cup of coffee now. I can go ahead and click off the video. And sometimes I trip people up out there because I don't say, I don't say my outro or I don't say my intro at the beginning of the video. And I always get a few comments that way. But yeah, it's definitely funny. Personal branding.
It's funny how jarring that can be, actually, because as I'm sure many other people listening follow John Switzer at Black Bear Forge, 99% of his videos start with this direct shot of looking at him standing behind his anvil. And I always get a bit of a jolt and think I've clicked on the wrong video when his videos start at a close-up of something, because he sometimes does those, the shorter videos. And so, did I not click on the Black Bear Forge? Oh, no, it is. There's his voice. There's that accent.
Yep. It's that conditioning. And that's something that doesn't get talked about a whole lot in like social marketing or networking or in business. And blacksmiths are a bit behind the times when it comes to this, building that brand and being aware of yourself, what you are doing that is getting portrayed across the internet, to potentially thousands of people every day. You may have a nervous tick that you have to stop. In my earlier videos, I used to say, a lot, like because it was a nervous tick of being on camera. I call it staring into a soulless black pit, which is that iris looking back at you. It's not a real human being face to face. You kind of have to look past that, like as if you were talking to a person. And but yeah, that if you switch things up, you can end up getting a negative response, you know, because people are used to that, like their favorite coffee, their favorite route to work, you know, their favorite song on the radio. If you become kind of someone's favorite, it's really hard to transition out of that. So you got to make sure it's something you're comfortable with long term.
Yeah,
it's been something I've been fighting with my channel, is trying to find that kind of persona that I want to continue, you know, through my videos. When I started out, it was kind of, I was taking pieces from your videos, pieces from John's, pieces from Alex Steele and all that kind of stuff, trying to make something that worked. But now I'm trying to find my own role, as my channel slowly grows, to try and make sure that I don't, you know, split out too far. And
you've got to just commit to the Blue Ninja, Sam.
That's it, man. I mean, I actually have to get some headbands made up by a company or something with Blue Ninja on them.
Sure.
Terry
Cloth.
But I mean, it's like, it's the same for me on Instagram. If I can easily track what my followers want to see. They want to see swords, and they want to see big, bad swords, and maybe a Viking axe, maybe, but not a regular axe, and not a hammer, not a grinder, not anything else, just swords and axes. That's all they're interested in. And like those posts, they spike sky high in like response. Like my most liked picture on Instagram is like 2,300 likes or something. And that's like insane. And I haven't even come close.
Therein lies the real trick, though, because those analytics, you've got to make use of them. They tell you what you need to know, and you've got to keep your finger on the pulse that way, because analytics is what saves you. Look at what videos have been most popular. Look at the age groups, because YouTube, I think, does split it amongst age groups and genders and things. Look who's looking at what videos, and maybe design future content around those statistics to try and capitalize on what you're selling.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, I want my Instagram page to be like, not only about swords. There are Instagram pages for only swords, so they can have those. But I want it to be about me and what I do. So I don't care if I get less likes on a hammer or whatever. Yeah. I'm still pretty stoked anyways. I get a lot of likes. So
that was one of the things.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that real quick if I could.
Yeah.
So I think it's incredibly important. I mean, we live in a day where, you know, social media, you know, we see something like, you know, you guys see like for the swords, right? And you see that those posts are super popular. And then you kind of just want to do more of the same thing to take and help get your brand awareness out there. And I think that's a great thing. But ultimately, you need to find out who you are as a smith and who you are as a person, and then just put that out there. And what you'll do is, if you're doing something you're passionate about, you can never fail. And I wholeheartedly believe that. And so, you know, you've got to put out the truest form of you out there online. And if you do that, you won't attract everyone and their brother and their cousin and their aunt, but you will take and attract the right people who will take and take you seriously and buy your products.
Quality over quantity.
It's producing quality because it's the thing that you're most into. So you're most adept to do the best that you can at it. Just like online, I know a lot of people would like me to make a knife or forge Damascus, and I'm really not interested in any of those topics other than I have mass respect for people who do them, like Sam. But that's one of those things where that's just not me. And I'm okay with that. If I don't ever get to a million subscribers, I don't really care. I'm going to be doing what I believe the Lord called me to do and what personally fascinates me. And that's and if you can get into that, I believe, you know, it's that thing like where if you build it, they will come type deal.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Find people.
if you're not
Damascus or swords right now.
That's one of the things that you know, drew me to your channel in the first place, Roy. Yours and John's and Torbjörn Armin is the very obvious passion for the work that you're doing. You know, like, as I think I've said to you in a few times when we've talked to each other, I'm not an iron worker. I don't make gates. I don't make, you know, racks and stuff like that. I don't make beautiful scroll work like you do. And when I try, I dismally fail.
You're getting there, Sam. I'm working on you.
I even did some more practice in my last video, but the big thing is at the end of the day, it's that passion that you have for your craft and the very obvious, you know, motivation you have for that craft that drew me to subscribe to your channel. I find there are quite a few channels out there who do make content purely to kind of appease the current trend, but it's almost soulless. So, you know, that's something that I've fought against. A lot of people have suggested, you know, on my videos, oh, you should make this, you should make that. And it's just not stuff I'm interested in. And while I could probably guarantee more views, I think it would be less ingenuous. Like it would be disingenuous to do that kind of thing.
I absolutely agree. Like,
doing what I love.
with what I was saying with the analytics, I didn't mean to imply that we should sort of chase just what people are looking for. I'm a huge believer, as anybody who's probably seen me work would agree, a huge believer in doing what you're passionate about, because that's where your best work comes out. However, sometimes a video may have used different camera angles. I know, for example, Sam's recent live streams now with the Wi-Fi extender, you can get close to the anvil and people have been loving seeing that. And so if those videos where you've used a different type of lighting setup or perhaps tried different techniques with your camera work, or perhaps you got a new lavalier microphone or something that had better audio quality, your analytics will tell you when you're on a winner or when you're not. But absolutely, it's sort of there's no question about it. Work with what you are most passionate about and you will do your best work. And we've all seen channels that we have loved in the past go the south because people have just chased the money.
Yeah,
not mentioning any channels. No, specifically
not mentioning any at all.
I'm really tempted to cough right now.
It is an easy temptation, but really, like the old adage goes, money can't buy happiness. You know, you can have all the success in the world, but if you don't love what you're doing, you're working. If you're loving every minute of what you're doing, it's not a job.
Yeah. I think one of the other things, I know I suffer from this quite a bit, being online and being in the position that I am right now, which is crazy and mind-blowing to me. I know some people will think I'm arrogant when I say being in a certain position. It's just stating a fact for me.
Oh, we all know your position.
So you know, it's just stating kind of a fact, and that being at a point, there's a certain responsibility and there's a pressure when we get a little over 250,000 views a month in our analytics, and to think that that's 250,000 possible people. Now, a lot of that's my dedicated subscribers, dedicated fan base, and that makes up about 400 or so people. But if you stand in a room of 400 people, that's a lot of people. And, you know, you have an ability to take and lead a lot of people the wrong way, lead people astray. So there's this pressure to keep at a certain point. Like, you know, you can't fail, can't mess up. You got to make sure that you get, you know, do everything, you know, cross your T's and dot your I's, you know,
And you're speaking as a YouTuber who actually has gone back and revisited things and confronted comments about where people have challenged things. I know the whole Super Quench videos that you did, where you did a couple of follow-ups there, and you know that sort of thing. It shows where that genuineness and the modesty actually comes into play, because you know you refuse to put out false information, and that's, you know, that's where it all comes down. I mean, when you reveal that side of yourself, you show where your passion's coming from. That it's not about the money, it's not about success, it's about teaching people in this and sharing the passion for the craft.
Yeah. And that goes back to my original statement that, you know, you can't fail at what you're passionate about, and to find your own voice and find who you are as a Smith. Because like, once you get up to the level of some of these guys here on YouTube, you know, and it kind of seems like maybe they've been a bit of a shill, you know, they sold out for fame or fortune. I think a lot of that's kind of social anxiety. A lot of that's kind of social pressure, because, you know, you did something to get to that point that a bunch of people, you know, said, hey, you're great, you're awesome, you're this. And the second you step outside of that, you get nothing but hate or negativity or things like that. And so it kind of whips you back into shape, you know, saying, okay, well, I guess I just have to do this. So that's why it's really important to define what you're willing to allow people to have a say so in your life about. And it's really important for you to define where you're going and where you came from and be okay with yourself currently where you're at. And if you can do that, that will really help bless your business going forward to be able to take and do that. And you won't get to a point where you become a sellout.
That's really some solid advice for life in general, really. I've always thought that two of the most important life lessons a person can learn is learning when to say yes and when to say no.
Yeah. And you know, ultimately, we have one spin on this rock, fellas. We get one spin. You know, and you have to decide how you're going to spin that spin. You can spend your whole life in a factory, you know, just doing a job, or you could love that job in the factory. You know, there's nothing wrong with working a 9 to 5 or a 9 to 9 if you love working that hard, you know. But there's also nothing wrong if you want to be self-employed or if you want to run your own business or if you want to hire 5 or 6 other guys or collaborate on a business and go that route as well. Again, you have to be comfortable in your own skin and know where you're going.
Yeah. The author Neil Gaiman actually had he did a commencement speech. It was a fantastic video if you ever search on YouTube for it, Neil Gaiman commencement speech. But he talks about having your goal in life of where you want to be and visualizing it like a distant mountain. And every time something happens in life and you've got to make a decision, you actually just work out, is it going to take me closer to the mountain or further away from it? And nothing is going to be a wrong decision if it's taking you closer to the mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a great analogy. That's a great analogy there. I know personally here, you know, you asked me what I was getting up to. So right now I'm actually in a transition in my business. You know, I had pretty good success selling quite a bit of copper work. I've sold just right over a hair over 3,000 pieces of copper in like the last 3 years or so. And, most of those have been in the last two. So, and that's one, that's uno, that's me basically hammering there. And that's really had an impact on like my joint health and things like that. So I have to transition to things that are a bit slower for me, a bit slower paced, that I can do more high detailed work or high skill work and less production, you know, putting things out there. And so that's a big, scary leap of faith that I'm going through right now in my business, looking at that big mountain, because it's like climbing all over again. But as I was just talking with Jess this morning and last night, is it feels right now like we had slid back down in our business, you know, back to square one. But we're not. We just came up to a point where we were at a plateau, we've went down a valley a little bit, and now we're heading back up the mountain. We're still on the same mountain. We're still climbing, and we are nowhere close to where we used to be, which was $840 a month income, you know, living on government assistance. You know, I mean, we did it. We had the Medicare and the WIC, and I had two small youngins and one on the way, you know, and here I am trying to make a living as an artist blacksmith. And those were really tough and tight times, going around every show I could get into and get involved in. And to think of where I'm at now comparatively, you know, I used to, all I had was my coal forge that you guys see in every video, a 55-pound Harbor Freight anvil and a 3-pound hammer and a dream. And that's what I started. That's what I started Christ-Centered Ironworks with. And who knows, by the end of my life, that might be what I end up with Christ-Centered Ironworks. We'll have to see how the next 3 to 5 years play out for me.
It'll be a heck of a ride either way.
Yeah. It's either going to be a fast ride to the bottom or a slow climb to the top.
So I've been thinking a little bit about some questions for you today, and since I have been watching your videos since I started, I think, and also you helped me a lot with the hook, the horse nail hook thing. It helped me out last winter, making really some extra. Yeah, thanks a lot for that. But I was thinking this morning I was watching going back on your YouTube channel and watching. I think the first video you made were a little over 3 years ago, and it was building a fortune. I wouldn't even call that a video. It was mostly photos cut after each other. So how did that, like, when did you notice that the YouTube thing was something that was going to grow and that you wanted to get involved with?
So the interesting thing about YouTube, I didn't want to get started on YouTube at all. In fact, I was very anti-technology at the time. so it was my wife's persuading a little bit that, you know, maybe I should try to do a couple videos. And this came after I came back from a class with another very well-known YouTuber that is on YouTube. I won't mention names because, you know, I'm going to mention the price that he was telling me that he got a month. And at that time, like I said, I was, you know, struggling to make ends meet. But I had got fortunate enough to go take a class with this person under a scholarship. Well, try to make the long story short if I can do that. But anyway, so basically in class, it was saying, oh, yeah, you know, I posted some videos a few years ago and I still make like $400 a month. And I mean, man, $400 a month, I'm like, that would change my whole world when you're making $847 a month, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, well, I could throw up a few videos. And what I found out real quick is that I was terrible on camera. I had, and even once I did start putting my face on camera, I was horrible on camera. I found that as I went along there, I got a little bit better, but I started with the slideshow things. I'm like, well, I'll just throw a few videos up and we'll see how that goes. And then I didn't really see any results. So I'm like, eh, this isn't worth it. And so I quit for basically an entire year. I didn't do anything with the channel. And then when I came back, I'm like, you know, I said, I've been watching YouTube a lot lately. I wonder where my channel's at, you know, the channel that I had started a year ago. And Lord and behold, there was like, you know, 300-400 people that had subscribed to me. And I'm like, well, gee whiz, that's more people than I know. So so at that point, that kind of got it kicked off that, hey, there might be something to this a little bit. And so I kind of started with just a few posts, and then it really started getting traction, and I really started getting the views, and a couple hundred guys a month started subscribing. And yeah, it's been just it's been a whirlwind since.
Yeah. Awesome. And I mean, to become one of those staple people, I mean, there's a sort of like half dozen blacksmiths on YouTube that pretty much anybody who blacksmiths is subscribed to. And it's still weird to just look at my computer screen right now and actually see Roy Adams looking back at me. It's I'm sure everybody else is feeling this too.
Well, hopefully, yeah. I look today.
You changed your look a bit over the years, though.
I have.
From the fisherman's beard now to a more cleaned up. Beautiful beard, not as beautiful as mine though, but you're getting there.
Beard's hard for me. It's taken me 30 years to get this far.
That's what I tell people. I'm just inbuilt with some white trash DNA, and it just grows in looking like this. I don't really. It just nothing helps.
I think I'm right there with you, brother.
Yeah, it's because I'm Swedish, probably. So I got a lot of beard.
Gotta be Swedish. I don't think you could be a Norseman without, right?
Yeah,
that's right. You like, got a big lush beard. Necklace. I've seen Nils without the beard. He should keep it.
I don't disagree.
Thank you, guys.
Well, I mean, we've talked about the online presence, but another aspect of being a blacksmith is actually getting out amongst the people and touting your wares at craft fairs and markets and doing live demos. And really, it's such a it's one of those fields that very few people can walk past and just ignore. most people, sort of lay people, they see, is that really a blacksmith? I mean, I do it in my driveway here, and the amount of people that do double takes and things doing, Sam does a lot of live demos at medieval fairs, Renaissance fairs, that sort of thing. And it's always a bit of a showstopper, but making money at those things and convincing people to actually buy your work is another story. It's easy to get the interest when you're swinging a hammer in a public place, but, We've got another another topic that Roy is actually quite well versed in, and has actually got an excellent video, which I do recommend searching for on his channel, about marketing yourself at live events. But anything that you wanted to actually talk about on the topic in the show, Roy, would be much appreciated.
Yeah. So back in the earlier years of us, you know, trying to make it by, we definitely dealt with that a lot. Finding that groove to encourage people to buy. And I think it's the biggest important thing that you can take with you going to a craft show, an art festival, something like that, maybe going to Renaissance fairs. Here in the States, we have reenactments, like Civil War reenactments and different things like that, that you can, you know, they call them rendezvous. I don't know if you have a similar thing over there in Australia, but you have to take and engage people with your product, and then you have to be realistic about your ask. So ultimately, at most shows, you have the weekend warrior, the weekend warrior dollar. Maybe they walk out of the house with $20 to $50 in their pocket. And after that, they're going to be tapped, or it's going on the credit card, right? So you have to be conscientious of that at shows. And as what I personally found, what Jessica and I found, is it's good if you can have somebody manage your table. So, you know, whether that be a pretty face, that be your wife, and, you know, that be, I don't know, some college kid that you pull off the street somewhere and say, hey, I'm going to pay you $40 for the day to sit at the booth, which I don't even think that would cut it anymore. They'd be like, no way, man. But it's really helpful if you can have somebody manage that, and then for you to include live demonstration, because in the technological world that we live in, there's a disconnect of value. So people go out and think nothing about spending $1,000+ on their iPhone, but the second they come across something that's handcrafted, they have this major disconnect between art. They just see it as a useless item that doesn't have any buttons. You know, it doesn't go boop, 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 boop. You know, it doesn't play music. They can't chat with their friends on it. And so therefore, there's a bit of that disconnect. And if you are an artist of any medium, it's up to you to educate that customer or that potential customer about your craft and what you're doing and why it's important. So having a good deal of showmanship is a great way of actually making money at shows. So, and that's not something that I can say that some people are naturally born with. Some people are just natural jokesters, and they can put on a show like you wouldn't believe. But for other people like me and myself, I have to take and do a lot of dress rehearsals. I have to go out there. I have to do a lot of shows or a lot of films on YouTube or something before I get comfortable with something enough that I feel that I can speak as an authority on something like that. So, you know, when you go to shows, try to demonstrate as much as you can your craft and your passion, and the right people will come by your booth then and connect with you. And never think that somebody who's come up to your booth and grabbed a business card is a lost sell, because I've had people come up years later, said, hey, do you remember me? I'm like, sure, Bob. You know, you're like, my name's Frank. I mean, Frank. Yeah. Frank, you're that guy.
That's why Australians call each other mate. We just forget each other's names so we can just call them mate. G'day, mate. Everyone. How's it going?
Well, actually, here in America, it's buddy.
No, right.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things about the live demonstrations, and one of the things I've been grateful for the YouTube community in general, I've been bladesmithing for 6 years, selling my wares for about 3, but I've only been running my YouTube channel for about a year. And when I first started selling my stuff, one of the biggest issues I ran into was the disconnect between the amount of effort that I'd put in and all of the money that I'd put into the item and the price that I could charge for it. And I found that, you know, similar to the disconnect with, you know, they don't see value in it as a useful item. There was also a disconnect in the value it has as an item itself. You know, like they have no problem spending $1,000 on an iPhone because they know it's, you know, they know how much work and how much R&D and how much, you know, kind of money goes into it. Whereas with a blacksmith item, they just see a piece of twisted steel and they kind of go, oh, that's pretty easy to make. You should charge $2 for that, because I see that on eBay for $2. And so having those live demonstrations, but also having the YouTube channels like yourself and John and all those guys, having those YouTube channels out there that are growing in popularity, and people who may not even be blacksmiths, may not even be interested in blacksmithing, have just kind of stumbled across it, now kind of understand the amount of effort and the amount of talent that goes into creating those items. And so therefore the value of the item itself becomes more realistic in their eyes when they see how much effort goes into it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I probably about 2/3 of my income from blacksmithing comes from live shows. I haven't actually done any demonstrations yet, just because it's a little bit harder in Brisbane with the various laws and rules in the city. I'll be doing a lot more when I move to the country in a couple of months. But doing market shows, one thing that I see a lot of people, especially handcraft artisans, do is they'll lay out a black tablecloth on a table and then just lay the items out with price tags next to it and call it good. And a large amount of the interest that I get to my booth is that I've actually taken a heap of sort of pallet wood and burlap and things. I've created wonderful little stands that are custom designed to hold things, because they only take a few minutes to knock up, but it creates this visual interest and people come over and there's so much to explore because there's so many little nooks and crannies for them to look in. And it helps doing small things, because most of my work is jewelry, or has been lately, and so there's a lot to go through. But creating that visual interest, it's almost like a story that they have to walk through, and that makes them spend the time. And if they've invested the time, there's a link in their brain where they think, well, I've spent the time here and this is clearly valuable to me.
Yeah, you're 100% on the right track there. Abhor horizontal places when it comes to trying to sell your ironwork, because ultimately you got to remember, I can't see you from this end of the screen, but, you know, Sam's a pretty intimidating guy, you know, so if he's sweaty and, you know, he's swinging a hammer around a bit and you know, that's a bit intimidating to come up. So making people feel like, you know, you're a jovial person that they can come up and not get conked on top of the head, you know, that's...
I'm lucky enough that my wife is also a very crafty person, and she's often at the table with me selling her things that she makes. So people get to deal with her, and because I'm a 6'5" giant, I'm a very large man, but she's 5'2" and adorable looking, and she's people like to that they don't get intimidated walking over to see her. So it's good to do that.
That's good. Keep working that angle.
That's right. But I mean, I've had great success not being able to do the live demos, having a tablet, an Android tablet there playing a looped video of me working and making things. It gets just as much interest from people walking past, or probably not just as much as an actual demonstration, but it shows the people a link to how this is a handcrafted item using this ancient technique that hasn't changed in, you know, hundreds of years.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great when you can do that. Want to go back to something that Sam was talking about. You were talking a little bit about kind of like that disconnect on the pricing of items and, you know, kind of knowing what to price and charge at a show. You know, there's a bit of that disconnect there. And, you know, my biggest thing that I tell anybody online, you guys watched me for a long time, my story hasn't changed in this, charge what you need from an item, because ultimately, and this is just the reality that we're living in, and this is definitely my reality of who I am selling towards, and I've taken a little bit of chastisement online, as you always will, whenever you put out a stiff stance on something. But ultimately, we are working for people with disposable income. We're not working for guys like ourselves. Like, as much as I love Sam here, I'm probably not going to go right out if he starts charging $2,000 for a knife because he does darn good work and he deserves it. And that's what he needs. I'm not the type that I have enough disposable income that I can spend on a knife, you know? So ultimately that's what you're looking for. And so you got to realize those people that are coming up that maybe have a disinterest in your price, you know, they're just like you, you know, where you wouldn't spend $5,000 on some sort of smart TV and you wouldn't have that hanging in your home, even though it might be nice. Maybe you don't have the funds for it. A lot of other people are like that too. And it's not that we couldn't cater some of our pricing or some of our items to be more inclusive to people like ourselves. And that's okay if that's your market space that you're working in. But ultimately, in order to make a full-time income, it comes down to numbers, you know, insurances and, you know, rent and, you know, propane bills and cost of equipment. It all adds up. So you have to charge what you need. And if you find that you're not getting what you need at a particular event, you need to look for other events that are maybe a potentially a bit more upscale.
And that actually ties back to what you were saying before, you know, about having that pride and the purpose in doing it. If you are, you know, forcing yourself to sell things for rates that you do not believe are worthy of the work that you put into them, then you're not exhibiting the pride in your work that you should have that will keep you going.
Exactly. And it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. Yeah. You know, if you spend 15 hours a day at your regular day job, and I've worked jobs where I've worked 16 hours, you know, in one day at a job and did that like 8 months in a row, you know, and they just worked me like a dog. You know, if you had to take and split your attention between that and then you go to a show where nobody wants to pay you $4.50 for, you know, something that took you 6 hours to make, you know, that could get real disheartening real quick. And so you just kind of have to have that thick skin and, again, have that pride enough in your work and to say, hey, I'm worth this much, my kids, my wife, you know, my husband, my whatever, you know, wherever you're at in life, it's worth this much to me.
And there's always people out there that see that value there. I mean, you may not be talking to one in the moment, but if you wait, they'll come. The people that pick up the thing off your table and you see the love in their eyes and they say, wow, did you make this? That person is probably just going to be the next person you talk to. Even if you've just had a string of 10 people that sneer at it and scoff at the price, the next person around the corner is going to be that person that falls in love with it and it just makes their day.
Yeah, but I mean, there's one thing about that. For example, me, who makes axes, that's the thing that I sell the most of. I mean, my competitors here in Sweden are like Gränsfors Bruk. We say Gränsfors Bruk, say man på svenska.
We try and say
that. That sounds so much better than the way I say it.
Try it, Troy.
Mine's Gränsfors Bruk.
Okay, now I'm gonna give you the lesson here. Gränsfors Bruk.
that's good. Yeah, I'm not even going to attempt. We'll have to do this on several more.
Yeah, you're always invited back, man. But back to the point. Like my competitors are like Gränsfors Bruk and other big. I mean, we have Hultafors here as well. And other ones as well. So, and I don't really see them as competitors because it's a whole different thing with a thing that's made by just a hammer and an anvil. But at the same time, I can't, like in the moment, I can't price my axes for an hourly rate since I don't have a press or a power hammer. And basically my axes are going to take at least 6 hours more in the current state than if I had a press or a power hammer, because if I did, then my price would actually bring me money per hour that would be fair, in my opinion. So I'm basically valuing my item as if I would have a power hammer, because that's what the competition have. And that's my mindset in this regard, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So, you know, that is one way of looking at it, but I'll offer you kind of a difference of opinion there.
Sure.
people have mass respect for things that are worked by hand and at the anvil, and it's ultimately the main thing that draws every last one of us to the craft. I haven't talked to one person in the decade plus that I've been doing this that was like, oh man, I saw a super sweet looking power hammer or a super sweet looking press and a guy just knocking out like 500 items on that thing. And yeah, that's what drew me to the craft. Most people are drawn by that handcrafted nature, you know,
the poetry of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the poetry of it. So what you're doing is you're selling people on that song. You're selling people on that poetry of your work and the fact that you're expressing yourself through this medium that is blacksmithing. And you need to look at it more of an art item than a production line item. Certainly there's a time and place to get to a point of doing production. And as you said, to make actually a profit and compete or even come close to something like Granz, whatever, Brooke, right? Brooke. That's what I would say. To even come close to making, being on that level, you have to be up at that level of production. But as you said it yourself, I could hear kind of that magic in your voice when you talked about your own work, about how it's all at the, you know, it's by hand and it's at the anvil and, you know, you put all this time and skill and investment into it. You know, I think that that is ultimately what you're selling people, because the item itself, I hate to tell you this, somebody's going to go out and chop a log on a concrete and, you know, and they're going to beat this axe to bits and eventually they'll leave it out in the rain and it might go to the scrap pile, just like my ironwork, you know. Taste will change and people will scrap the work that I did. Copper prices will go sky high again. And all of a sudden, you know, all my, all my copper work that I've ever sold will be heading down to the bin. So, you know, that's one of those things. An item on itself just is not valuable. It has no intrinsic value. It's the value that you apply as a smith. And I think that for you personally, I think that's how you could take and actually charge more than what your competitors are, because you are that lone craftsman and you're that lone smith standing at his anvil with hammer in hand.
And I guess it's also, I mean, I haven't been doing this for that long, 2 years this April, I think. And well, I've been happy. Well, I've been at this level, I've been for maybe 6 months or something, in my personal opinion. But I mean, I think it's also a thing in yourself that you're afraid that you're going to fail and that your axe is not going to be good enough. And, you know, so that's basically why you're lowering your price, because in case you didn't make a supreme product, you won't be ashamed of yourself because you did not price it that as high. And also you put a stupid thing like a lifetime guarantee on it, as I have. And that's just waiting to be fulfilled.
Well, that's only a problem if you sold like 12,000 units at, you know, $300 yes. each. Well, then you're in trouble, brother.
Yes. And you know, you say you might not want to buy one of my knives, you know, and I totally understand that, but I'd be always up for a trade.
I appreciate trade amongst craftsmen.
Absolutely. Yeah, I reckon we could win
your knives anyhow, but, you know, we'll see.
All good, nice. So, coming back to, you know, that pricing problem and stuff like that, again, I think that comes down to taking pride in your work and, to a certain extent, knowing that you are confident in the work. Like, I know that for me personally, just taking a personal example, when I first started selling knives, it was about 3 or 4 years after I'd started smithing. And at that stage, a lot of the knives I had made and then destroyed on purpose. You know, I'd taken them out and I'd beaten them, you know, against trees and I'd hammered them through logs and I'd put them in the vise and bent them to 90 degrees to try and break them. So that when I did come to finally selling my work, I was confident in its capabilities. Now, as you know, obviously that's as a knife maker. I imagine you could do something similar with an axe and, you know, take it out into the bush and use it and, you know, abuse it. And then come back and be able to tell the customer that, you know, yes, this will perform you know, like a, even if not better than, you know, your competitor's axes, at least to the same level. And I think that's one thing that helps me when I come to pricing my work, because I'm one of those people that hates overcharging people. I absolutely abhor it. But at the same time, it's like I can't undercharge people, because then I am just hurting myself. So it helps me when I get to that point where I have to put that price tag on my work to go, I can stand behind this. I do know that it'll do the job. And I imagine it's the same for you, Roy, in that, you know, when you're making your iron work, you know that it's going to hold together. You know it's going to do what it's designed to do, whether that be a railing or a, you know, a bowl or anything like that. You've got different, you know, kind of issues with your work, you know, than I would with a knife, but a very similar process.
Well, Roy actually highlighted something very poignant with Nils, hearing the passion in his voice and when he was talking about the work that he did. Have you ever noticed when you talk to somebody about something that they're passionate about, you start getting a little bit excited about that thing yourself, because they're talking about something that's genuinely coming from their heart? And that really highlights why it's so important to get out and talk to people about what you're doing and do these craft shows, because when you meet the person that's crafted this thing, it's very easy to tell the passion that has gone into making it and where it's come from.
Sure. I mean, Roy's passion has always been infectious in his videos. It's quite obvious how much he enjoys himself.
And I will give you an axe for free for your abusement.
Man, I tell you what, that sounds like the deal of the century. Oh,
sure.
Direct message me after this is over.
I will do that.
That would cost. I'll do that. So.
And then you're just gonna have to make a video about it, ripping the crap out of it, you know, pointing out the floor.
Really go to town on something with it.
45 steel with it or something. You know, it's a hot cut in the shop.
Yes, that's it.
No, I won't do that.
throw out all your cold chisels. Just start using that instead.
Yeah. No more hot cuts, just hammer the back of the axe.
Yeah. I've seen people do that for sure. One thing I'd encourage your viewership here about, since I get on the stream, and obviously I can be a big sob about my ironwork, you know, and people will think, man, this guy's real foofty-doo here. A lot of the encouragement that I have found is, you know, and the reason why I've decided to open up about my business and you know, try to help other Smiths along, I feel very blessed and fortunate to be where I'm at now and to actually have that perspective shift, because I was once where a lot of guys are right now and gals that are just getting started into their mountain climb, so to speak. And I know that that's tough. And you're going to have people who say, like, what? Well, that's not real job. You know, there's going to be plenty of people who don't see value in what you do. And that's why it's incredibly important, you know, to just constantly put that, you know, proverbial axe to the grind and kind of block out that negativity. Now, that's not to say block out sound wisdom. You know, if you're going to bet the whole farm on S hooks, you might want to take a breather for a second. You know what I'm saying? I've seen guys, we get a lot of emails, a couple hundred of them a month, actually, of people who are thinking about, you know, transitioning out of something that they hate doing or their day job, you know, to just dump everything they've got into this passion of theirs. And our most, you know, replied response is, you know, don't look at the place that you're at in life as a negative. Look at it as a positive. Right now, if you have a full-time income, you can be buying, instead of buying new TVs and, you know, some nice Gucci clothing, and which I don't even know if it's nice anymore. I don't even like Gucci clothing. But anyways, you know, if you're trying to take and buy nice things, but you're not investing into that business now, you're in for a real rude awakening as soon as you, you know, like you jump off the crazy train and you get rid of that $150,000 a year job that you hate to go to making maybe $12,000 a year as an artist. And you kind of have to go that road, and that's kind of a tough thing. So it's nice if you have a shop loaded full of equipment first, because I tell you what, every dollar will count. Every penny will count when you're just getting started. When you look at a belt that costs you $3, you'd be like, man, that's the difference between me eating this week or not. It really adds up. So I like to encourage people that, you know, you got to find that passion that you're about, and don't be afraid to charge the price that you need, because there's a customer out there. Sometimes we get this disconnect of ethics. I don't even think it's a disconnect. It's just a misconception, is that price is comparable to ethical standards, and it's not. Price, I could put something on a table and it won't sell for $20, and I'll have people shocked and awed that I'm even trying to charge $20 for it, and take that same item and mark it up to $250. And guess what? I can't keep them on the table. So it's all about, you can't make that decision of what's ethical or what's the right price for something for your customer. Your customer dictates that price for you. So, you know, I like to encourage people, when you're just getting started out, don't get hung up on feeling bad about the price you have to charge in order to make a living wage on those things, because you hear it a lot. You know, I hear it a lot, hear it a bunch, is, you know, I don't feel right, or I couldn't sleep at night charging the prices you do.
But I mean, on that note, I've actually just been talking to a woman, and we have been like talking about in the future if we were going to move together. And we actually spoke about that, you know, that the dream is not to just have a house all of a sudden with all the furniture in it, but actually starting out in an apartment and building up our life as we go on. Now, we're not together yet or stuff like that, but you know, we're talking about it a little bit, so we'll see.
I said congratulations.
Yeah, well, I don't want to take out the victory. I don't want to take out the victory yet. We'll see. But we're talking a little bit. But anyway, so I mean, it's the same in the blacksmith shop. I think that it's not a bad idea to keep your old job until you worked up your tooling, because as you said, the tools will be expensive. But there's also like something that we have been talking about in earlier episodes, like when you're feeling the progression of yourself as a blacksmith, and you can also see the difference inside your shop as tools are starting to appear on the shelves.
Yeah, and that's definitely an important part. I actually, funnily enough, Roy touched on a subject that I wanted to get to before the end of the podcast. I realize we're kind of approaching an hour pretty quickly, but Roy did touch on this. We did touch on the subject of the blacksmithing community and how it's built and the support that's there, and the, you know, the constant growth that we're seeing in the community from, you know, guys like yourself and Yamez at Island Metal Forge. And you know, one thing I wanted to shout out to those people who are listening to this podcast is there is a series of the playlist that Yamez has built around what the blacksmithing community means to those blacksmiths who are on YouTube. And I've been greatly enjoying watching people and their reactions to that, because, you know, for me, it's been a really big move going onto YouTube. So full-time, kind of, you know, one, two videos a week, full-time enough. The outpouring of support, I mean, we always get our detractors. And I have seen in Roy's comment section quite a few detractors for stuff like your pricing and stuff like that. But that is so outmatched. But that is so outmatched by the outpouring of support from the community as well. There's so many supportive people out there, and that's not just on YouTube. You know, that there are Facebook groups and all that kind of stuff out there that. There's just massive outpourings of support for artisans of all types. And I think that's a really big thing that people don't really know or don't really pay attention to when they first get into the craft. They kind of fixate on one source. Like, you know, they'll start watching your videos, Roy, and that'll be the only place that they get their information, and they'll be afraid to kind of go out of the box because they're terrified of, you know, meeting those, you know, detractors in other places. But yeah, there is such a huge and supportive community out there for blacksmiths, and, you know, beginners or professionals, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are willing to support us. And I mean, it surprised me. It shouldn't have surprised me, but it did, how approachable you were, you know, on, you know, everyday subjects regarding blacksmithing. And, you know, that's been a very common theme that I've noticed with a lot of the big time blacksmiths that I know, is that they are very approachable with questions and stuff like that if you do have them. And I've tried to do the same mine. So
I actually had to send Yames an apology about that, because I'm one of the videos on that playlist, because there was some sort of glitch in the uploading system, and it looked like Roy's video came out before Yames's video. And I was watching it. I was sitting on the couch, and I was watching it on my phone, and I got so inspired that halfway through Roy's video, I thought, you know what? I'm doing it. I'm going to say it, because I really love this community. I ran down, got in the workshop, got set up, did the video, uploaded it, went back up, and then went, oh. Because I'm saying, oh, Roy had this great idea. And it was Yames. And then I look at Sam's live stream, and Yames is on there going, yeah, a few people have actually been making that.
Yeah, that's one of those things that you can't always control YouTube. And sometimes they glitch videos where I've posted them, and then they never came out. So I ended up having to delete the upload and completely re-upload it in order for it to actually post the video. So, tech issues.
I mean, on the detractors, you do get quite a bit of the cross-pollination problems where, you know, like I'll go onto a video from yourself, and you'll be making, say, a hot set or, you know, you'll be making a hammer drift or something like that. And it just so happened that, you know, John from Black Bear Forge has made one like 2 weeks previous, and everyone would be like, oh, you're just copying Black Bear Forge. Grr.
Yeah. I'm basically copying Smiths for the last 12,000 years of recorded human history. So, I'm an evil person.
Yeah. How dare
I think
you?
A lot of the lay people that leave comments like that don't realize just how close-knit this community really is, and that we all are inspired by one another, and we're all on such a level playing field. I mean, obviously there's a lot of us that look up to people like John and Roy and Yames, but really all of, and I said this in my video, all of them, everybody, no matter how quote-unquote highly ranked they are, we'll sit and chat to you about blacksmithing, because it's just this shared passion, and we're all, you know, equal in that passion that we feel for it. It's this purity to the craft that doesn't seem to be spoiled yet. And like Roy said, this has been going on for thousands of years. You know, it hasn't been spoiled yet. I don't think it can be. We're really, we're sort of, it's like a brotherhood, or, you know, if there's a gender neutral version of brotherhood, that is forged in fire, literally. I mean, it's just a beautiful craft. And as somebody that's had a comically diverse background of trades, blacksmithing has been the only one that I would actually say matches that description.
So basically the translation of that is that we're all giant nerds, and we really like talking about our geeky hobby.
Damn right.
yeah, that's what it is.
Well, think about it, guys. Instead
of Yodas, we have like the Samuel Yellens and like other great Smiths of the day.
we're all nerds at heart.
Yeah, we're all nerds at heart. Yeah, to talk a little bit about that cross-pollination thing of going across YouTube, you know, and you see a guy post a video that you're subscribed to in this community, and then you see somebody else post a video. There's been several times where a video that I was going to post that day was actually the exact same thing that John had posted. And so I waited 2 weeks to post it. So this way I could avoid
that's having just 'cause great minds think alike.
Yeah. And I think another thing that works there is oftentimes you don't see is some people forget that YouTube is like a secondary thing for me. It's actually a secondary income type deal. It's not really it's not my primary thing. And a lot of people think, you've got a business because of YouTube. No, I built a business a decade ago from the ground up. And, you know, so a lot of the stuff that I do now, is just out of necessity. If I need a fuller, if I need a hot cut in the shop, I just go to forging one and I say, hey, you know what? This might make a great video while I'm at it. So I'll just go ahead and film a video around it to help somebody else out there. And lo and behold, once you know it, John Switzer needed a hot cut, you know, in his shop as well at that point in time. And he made a video around it. So I think because John and I both do it professionally full time, and there's a lot of that going on behind the scenes, we're bound to take and run into each other with video ideals. And some of the things that I've done to kind of help skirt that is, if you notice, I shout out John Switzer all the time. I shout out guys like Daniel Moss. I shout out a bunch of different people, Yamez and Sam Towns. And I shout out a lot of different people just in the event. Well, not just because I like the guys. I mean, I honestly genuinely do care for you guys out there. But I just do that because, you know, hey, why not? Because there's a good chance if I see you guys put out a good video on something, that even if it's a different viewpoint than what I maybe agree with, I'm going to shout it out because, you know, that keeps everybody learning and it keeps you engaged with the craft. There's no one way of doing something.
And frankly, I like the opportunity when multiple people have done the same tool, because every blacksmith has their own style, their own way of working, the processes that I like to follow. Even though they end up with the same tool, the journey to get there tends to be very different. And in a field where it's almost, you know, a joy to actually find what your own style is, it's great to watch a lot of other people, because sometimes you have to sound like a lot of other people before you work out what you yourself sound like.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I mean, a lot of the time I'll watch several different viewpoints on a single tool to get an idea of how I can adapt the building of that tool to the tooling that I have. You know, like I could watch one of John Switzer's videos and, say making a flatter or making a hammer or something like that. And John will take it over to his power hammer or his press and he'll, you know, punch a hole in it in 2 seconds. And then I'll go over to Roy's channel making a hammer and he'll make it all by hand at the anvil and, you know, and so on and so forth. And you'll find so many different attacks at the same concept, but with varying tooling. So, you know, and when you come to my shop, it's the thing I've got is my hand and the anvil. So I have to kind of adapt those toolings, but I can find that I can kind of cross-pollinate some of the techniques from both people to, you know, come to a conclusion that I like. So, you know, and one of the things, you know, I'm a professional bladesmith myself, and I think it's quite common with the people that I follow. There aren't many craftsman style channels that I follow that are particular YouTubers. Like that's not their main job. The majority of the guys that I follow in the craftsmanship realm started a business and then started a YouTube channel. And I'm one of those as well. So I think that's quite common for us.
Yeah. One of the things that you spoke there about, and it's kind of a saying that I've come adjusted to, is, you know, looking for the thing behind the thing. So, or my favorite approach is what I was taught a long time ago by a guy by the name of Wayne Apgar. He was one of the first classes, first formal educations I had in blacksmithing. And I said, you know, how can I learn as much as I can in this class? And he said to take and learn the process, not the project.
And learn the why.
Yeah, the why, the who's, the hows, you know. And what you'll find with me is I'm an opinionated guy, very opinionated, I'm shamefully so sometimes. So I get a lot of repenting time on my own time for being so opinionated. Sometimes being set wrong.
Yeah, with us three, it's just like eggs in a carton. All of us four are about the same.
Yeah, and so with the opinion, you know, with being with my opinions the way they are, I highly encourage people to take the words that I say, try it out for yourself. If something doesn't quite jive with you, try out somebody else's methods. And so it's learning my process, because a lot of people don't know this, but even though I may share a concept about the way I like my anvil dressed or set up, if you watch enough of the videos, you'll see why I like my anvil a certain way, or why I believe the way I do about hammers, or striking or hammer control or all the different hot button topics that you might find in the blacksmithing community today, you know, you'll see why. Like if you see the people that I've studied under and the guys that I admire the most, their work the most, a lot of that translates out into my own iron work. And so it's not so much as saying, well, Roy's way is the only way or the right way of doing things. It's about, it's again, it's learning that process or that technique that I've spent a decade plus, coming up on 12 years now, say a decade plus, it's coming up on 12 years of forging. It's those bad habits, good habits, everything in between is on display for you to decide for yourself what you want to do with those.
I mean, that being said, you do say you're an opinionated guy and that you do have very strong opinions, and you know, that is probably true. But one of the things that I've always admired about you and your channel is that you never, you know, go out of your way to say this is the best way or this is the only way to do any specific technique. You know, it's one of the things I've always greatly admired.
It's just the Roy way.
Yeah, this is it. This is my way. This is the way I've found that works. And this is the way that I've found that works best for me. And, you know, while that could be, like, you know, quote unquote, the best way, you never present it that way. And so, you know, while you might say that you're opinionated, you're never, you know, kind of full of yourself when it comes to that kind of thing. And I think that's one of the things that I've kind of tried to emulate in my own channel. Is that nature of the fact that, you know, yeah, I do it this way and this way does work and I can show you how it works, but it may not be the way that you make it work. And, you know, I'm not the arbiter of everything that is true and right in the world. and so, yeah, I've always really admired that in your channel, is that you're never trying to tell people that they can't do something if it works. So yeah, I think you undersell yourself by calling yourself a little bit too opinionated.
I never mind opinionated people if they're able to back up what they say with the why and the explanation. I always find it the mark of a good person who is bold in what they're confident with and what they know about, and humble in what they don't know about. You know, I'm an outspoken, opinionated guy myself. But if somebody starts talking about something that I don't know anywhere near as much as them, I sit down and I listen because there's an opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, guys, we're coming up on 1 hour and 20 minutes of recording time now. And the day is passing by and I'm getting ready to go out in the forge, to be honest. I think we should wrap it up.
Okay.
Absolutely.
We need to do it again.
Yes, of course. You're welcome back anytime, man.
We would like to, you know, thank you again for spending some time with us, taking some time out of your busy schedule to, you know, grace us with your presence.
It's been your fantastic.
So for those few who does not know where to find you, Roy, will you please let them know where to get a hold of you?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Christ Centered Ironworks. It's basically synonymous. That's my company. You can find me all over the net. Just Google Christ Centered Ironworks or just Christ, and I should pop right up somewhere there in the Google search results on the first page. So it's not too hard to find me on that front. Same thing. It's the same all the way across the web. And you can always get a hold of me through my Gmail account at ChristCenteredForge@gmail.com. You can get a hold of me that way with any questions or things that you may have. So,
and also you can find, if you want to ask a question to ForgeCast, you can do that on ask.forgecast@gmail.com or write us on Instagram at the.forgecast. And you can follow me, Nils Ogren, whatever you want to say. It's Swedish and it's hard to pronounce in English. So, on Instagram at Nils Ogren in one word, and on YouTube, but that's not so important. You can find Sam at
Sam Towns Bladesmith on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Is also samtownsbladesmith@gmail.com.
And you can find Alex at...
Yeah, I go by Valhalla Ironworks. So you can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all of the social media. I'm all over the place. I'm like a bad smell. You can't get rid of me.
Awesome. Again, thanks a lot, Roy, for joining us. And you're always welcome back if you want to.
Yeah, most definitely. We'll have to schedule some time to do this again. I had a blast this morning. Thank you guys for being a blessing.
No worries. Thank you very much, Roy.
See you next week.
Cheers, guys.